Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 19th, 2012. I'm Carrie Klein, and this is a special podcast from the AAAS annual meeting in Vancouver, British Columbia.
My presentation was part of a symposium which I had co-organized on the future of mineral resources in the 21st century. And my own perspective on this is that we need to have a systems-oriented view on minerals, which incorporates the full mine-to-market supply chain of minerals, but then also looks at the livelihoods and development aspects of that supply chain. So not only just looking at where do the minerals come from, where do they go, but also what kinds of employment are created along the way. And only then will we really be able to address the question of what some people call the resource curse, that countries or communities which have minerals are often not performing as well as we would expect them to.
That's Salim Ali, a professor of environmental studies at the University of Vermont. He and a panel of economists, geologists, and engineers led a symposium and discussion about the future of mineral resource dependence in the 21st century. I began our discussion by asking him if mining and sustainability were mutually exclusive.
Well, we have to first of all recognize that modern society would not be possible without minerals. So minerals are essentially the elements, and we have to understand that the elements are the building blocks of all matter. We need to have that kind of approach to understanding the whole material cycle rather than trying to demonize minerals per se. Yes, there can be many problems by which they are extracted, but we have to appreciate the benefits also. And what we were trying to grapple with in this session is the conundrum of what we call disposability versus durability of materials that are produced from minerals. So the challenge is that durable materials, the ones where we are using less energy and we're reusing the material repeatedly, oftentimes they do not create the same development impact in terms of livelihoods and jobs. The other option is that you have disposable products where you have more of a steady employment stream, but you're having a negative impact on the environment. And so you're mining constantly and you're producing and you're creating jobs, but you're also having a deleterious impact on the environment. So the only solution to that is to have more of a cyclical economy. But what that requires is input of energy. What I was trying to suggest is our key metric for material cycling needs to incorporate entropy also, which is, of course, a physical sciences concept that tries to account for chaos in systems or the level of disorder. And so if we are keeping track of how much entropy is created also by our material cycles, and when we produce products which have a higher level of entropy, a higher level of chaos, and it's more difficult to then retrieve those materials back into our supply stream, that is the problem.
So I must say, when I think of entropy, I have a very textbook definition in my head. How does entropy manifest itself in this kind of situation?
Well, entropy manifests itself in terms of the level of waste disorder which you get once you are disposing of the material. So, for example, if you've got a cell phone and it's got many different kinds of elements in it, and you throw it into a landfill, you have increased the entropy tremendously because it'll be much more difficult to be able to retrieve that cell phone from the landfill. However, if you find a mechanism by which you are storing that cell phone until you find a better way to recycle it, you have managed the entropy a little bit better, so that even now, if we don't have economically effective ways of recycling the materials from the cell phone, you are still managing the entropy. So that's what policy has to try and focus on. That's what design has to focus on. And then we will have a much more constructive engagement with mineral flows, rather than having this very dichotomous view of either you have renewable resources or non-renewable resources. We need to really think about this at an elemental level, that all elements are renewable as long as we can manage the energy and the entropy aspect of the minerals.
So recycling could be a big part of this whole cycle. Of the metals and the phosphorus and materials that we consume, what's the state of recycling right now? Are we even close to balancing out the chaos with the consumption?
It varies tremendously from one metal to another, and especially metals are the ones where recycling is most consequential right now. So, for example, aluminum, we have very high levels of recycling for. Iron, we have very high levels of recycling for. For other kinds of rarer elements, the rare earths, very low levels. And so that's where we need to focus on. And our panelist, Tom Gradle, provided some important insights on how we should measure the criticality of certain kinds of metals based on those kinds of indicators.
Well, now let's move on to social responsibility, which was another point brought up in the session. What are some ways in which the processes that we use to extract things from the earth, what are some ways in which those can become more socially responsible?
Well, the main theme around social responsibility and minerals is one of ownership, which is that if communities are involved in owning both literally and symbolically the resource, that they feel they are part of the costs and the benefits of extracting it, you will find that the whole process becomes much better. So the community will feel the benefits are accruing better. So one of our panelists was from Alaska, and she talked about the Red Dog Mine, which is owned by the Nana Corporation, one of the native corporations in Alaska. So once they have that sense of direct partnership with the extraction process itself, then you see that the improvement will occur in terms of environmental responsibility also, as well as the social performance of the mine. There is a terrible legacy of mining in the past, which was done during colonial times, and hence that's why there is what we call a legacy issue. And so a lot of communities distrust mining companies based on that. But modern mining companies are really trying to change their culture around that. There is clear engagement. We had one example of the Voisey's Bay mine, for example, where economically it would have made sense for the company to extract the resource in 10 years. But they decided to delay the extraction cycle over 25 years so that this remote community in Labrador could actually accrue benefits over a longer, more steady time frame, so that they could then develop other alternative livelihood economies during that period. So that's the way to think about it, is that you are bringing forward the capital from the earth and then using it to diversify and develop a complex system which is more resilient. And that was also a critical theme throughout our discussion, was complexity leads to resilience, and that helps extractive economies. So that has to be a constant quest.
And another perspective when considering our consumption of these materials is also the role of the consumer. And in fact, you had a theme here in this presentation, which was need and greed. So how is the role of the consumer and social behavior going to play a factor in these resources?
Consumers have a role to play in what I call constructive consumption. So rather than just presuming that we should consume less, we should think about consuming smartly and consuming based on how we are helping develop sustainable livelihoods for others. The reason why I say that is a lot of the environmental narrative misses the problem of global inequality. We cannot escape the fact that we are living in a world with unprecedented levels of income inequality within countries and also across the board between countries. So when you have that dynamic, especially in absolute numbers of people, you might say that historically we had higher inequality in terms of feudals and peasants, but now we're talking about the total number of people who are involved in this inequality. The only way out of that is if we are able to provide some mechanism of livelihoods and wealth transfer from the rich to the poor. And for that to happen, we need to have some mechanism to have consumption of goods which are being produced in poorer countries, poorer economies, which can be consumed in rich countries. Or the other option is to just have development aid, which we have seen doesn't work as effectively on its own. So you create the right incentives for trade to allow for that inequality to be balanced out. So I think trade and aid coupled together is the only way out. And that requires exchange of materials, which requires exchange of the elements. And that also often gets missed in the environmental narrative because environmentalists have had a sort of normative view against trade. And when you have structural inequality in ways that exist now, you cannot have a reduction in human suffering without that kind of exchange in trade. And of course, you want that trade to be fair, not exploitative, and so on. But trade is an absolute necessity in that context. So.
Well, absolutely fascinating. Dr. Salim Ali, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Salim Ali spoke with me about mineral resource dependence, sustainability, and social responsibility at the AAAS meeting in Vancouver. I'm Carrie Klein, and thanks for listening to the Science Podcast. Check back on iTunes, the RSS feed, and the Science site for more podcasts from the meeting.